from Harrisburg to Pittsburgh, Indiana to Grantham, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania faces a structural budget deficit and tax policies that make our state uncompetitive. It is time for significant tax reform. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And the firebombing of the governor's residence was part of an assassination attempt on the life of Governor Josh Shapiro. I'll have a town hall commentary on why political violence is not okay. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. School choice is gaining steam nationwide, while here in Pennsylvania, State Representative Joe DeOrsi has introduced legislation that would give students and parents universal school choice. Last week, Education Freedom took a huge step forward in Texas, which enacted universal school choice into law. The North Dakota legislature has passed a bill that would establish education savings accounts, and North Dakota Governor Kelly Armstrong signed legislation allowing for the creation of public charter schools. A proposal to give students in Pennsylvania's worst-performing schools choice options is currently before the state Senate. State Senator Greg Rothman, who is also chairman of the Republican Party of Pennsylvania, has asked U.S. Attorney David Metcalf to investigate Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner. Krasner recently condemned President Donald Trump and Republicans as, quote, fundamentally fascists who need to be punched in the face as hard as possible, end quote. Rothman said Krasner's incendiary comments were a, quote, call to action, and that the progressive DA is encouraging violence. The dust is still settling on the 2024 congressional elections, but incumbent members of Congress are already in high gear, raising money for the 2026 elections. Pennsylvania once again will be in the national spotlight, with races in a number of competitive congressional districts. Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick of Bucks County raked in $1.2 million during the first quarter of this year. Fitzpatrick is the only GOP U.S. representative in southeastern Pennsylvania. He is a perennial target. Freshman Congressman Rob Bresnahan, who represents a district in northeastern Pennsylvania, raised $835,000, while fellow freshman Ryan McKenzie of the Lehigh Valley brought in $675,000. In the other highly competitive district, Representative Scott Perry of York County raised $565,000. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. As the state budget process progresses, the Commonwealth faces a structural budget deficit. Yet Governor Josh Shapiro is pushing for a massive spending increase. This while tax policies put Pennsylvania at a competitive disadvantage relative to other states when it comes to economic development. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation, and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association have a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
It's great to be here again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being here.
It is a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you.
Well, as ever, we're going to kick it around. And, here we are, and we're past the holidays, but that also means that we all survived tax day. So probably worth a little bit of reflection and looking back and talking about the tax burden in Pennsylvania and its effect on our overall competitiveness. Steve, you had some words about this recently.
Yeah, you think about, of course, as you mentioned, everyone is just who's had to file taxes has just done so in the last couple of weeks for the most part. And the IRS or the Department of Revenue, depending if you're talking state or local taxes. Someone's counting that money, putting it in the bank, doing what they do with it to follow through with funding the government's operations, which is what the, that tax money is ultimately for. And we think tax day, and we think we've moved on from that. But really, there's another date looming in the on the calendar here in Pennsylvania, June 30th, which is budget day.
Yes, the end of the fiscal year and the constitutional deadline for enacting a new budget.
And so those two things are very much intertwined. The amount that folks are asked to pay in taxes has a direct impact on the budget. And the budget, the spending level, determines how much the government is pressured to ask its citizenry to make up by paying taxes to fill the hole. And that's the situation we're in here. You know, we talk about Capital Watch, and we have that word watch in our name. And I was thinking about a watchdog.
Yeah, vigilance, yes.
Vigilance. And one of our jobs, I think certainly one of the things we do at the Commonwealth Foundation is try to be a good watchdog for taxpayers so that they know when something's up, when there's things about in the Capitol that are potentially going to impact the amount of taxes they have to pay. And what I thought of is you know, what does watchdog do when they see trouble? They bark, right?
Mm-hmm.
They alert
you.
Well, the dogs are barking. The dogs are barking in Harrisburg. The dogs are barking at the Capitol steps because something's up. And the problem is the path we're on, the path that is that Governor Shapiro is now leading us on in Pennsylvania, is running into what's called deficit spending. And in a very quick turnaround, literally a year from now, if nothing is done, if we stay on the same path and continue to spend what the governor is asking for in his budget proposal, we're going to be looking at a forced new tax on consumers somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 per family of four in Pennsylvania. And that's why the dogs are barking.
Yes. When rates are too high, collections are too low. Like having the high rate doesn't bring in the dollars that you need, and that it really – that the goal should be to optimize both the tax rate – to maximize growth, but also to restrain spending so that the government doesn't spend money faster than people can earn it, and which always suffocates growth. Again, we're talking about competitiveness, talking about how well our economy performs. And I guess I've been at this for longer than I'd care to admit, because it really reminds me very much of the situation in 1990 and 1991 that then Governor Bob Casey Sr. Was running for re-election and running on a campaign of everything's great, and that as soon as the election was over in December of 1990, whoops, we have $1 billion shortfall. And of course, back then, $1 billion was real money. What happened then, the drama that played out, is one of the most disgraceful chapters in Pennsylvania history, that it took $2 billion worth of pork projects to get the votes to pass the increase, the tax increase, to close the $1 billion budget shortfall. So you had a $3 billion tax increase on Pennsylvania's economy. A large amount of that fell on the business community, and it condemned Pennsylvania to two generations of economic underperformance. It took the whole Ridge administration and many years since to climb out of that, and we're still – our relative competitive position is still not great. And so this is what it's warning us about, that we could be facing another crisis of this kind, which could have devastating consequences for Pennsylvania's future.
And as you said, in some ways that crisis has never ended. It's been dicey.
Yes.
It's been up and down.
Yes.
But in the last several years, there has been some sanity brought around the budget, and there has – the rainy day fund has been refilled to some degree, and the budget reserves exist rather than budget deficits existed over these last several years. But now with – under Governor Shapiro's leadership, we're seeing a return to that past.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look just like at the out-migration numbers, like even today, 14 out of the past 15 years – we've had an out-migration of citizens from our Commonwealth, moving on to other states. And it's documented that in many cases, they're leaving for states with a better tax environment, a less onerous tax environment. That's one of the key causes of why people continue to leave Pennsylvania, just like they did back in the 90s when you were talking about Governor Casey's tax hike. Or spending hike.
Yeah. Well, and it was both. It was, you know, Governor Thornburg left the Commonwealth in a net surplus position. And because the Casey administration didn't hold the line on spending and, in fact, increased spending, it started that dynamic that wound up in deficit, the very thing that we're looking at right now. And it was the House Republican leader, Jesse Topper of Bedford County, spoke to a business meeting that PMA co-hosted with the PA Chamber, and that leader Topper pointed out that even if the General Assembly flat funded the state budget this year from last year, even that level is unsustainable. So that's the trajectory of the problem that we're facing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what Steve started out with by talking about the structural deficit that we're facing. And that is essentially that spending is increasing faster than revenues. And it's so frustrating because it really is just you get caught in this sort of snowball effect, because what that leads to is a never-ending debate over what more can we tax? What else can we grab to tax? Because you can never fulfill, it just keeps growing and growing. So you're always looking for that additional thing to tax. So in this year's budget, they're talking about taxing, legalizing recreational marijuana, taxing skill games. So every year we seem to bring up, like, what are the new things, the new shiny things that we can tax? So we're caught in this sort of snowballing of structural deficit where we're always having to defend, you know, against new taxes.
Yes. And if I could give you, Rebecca, an example from the 1991 tax increase, and I am not making this up, that, you know, because government greed is insatiable, they're always looking for new things to tax. And at that point in time, that the forces that the powers that be in Harrisburg said, hey, there's this new thing, computers, let's tax it. And that Pennsylvania instituted a unique computer services tax on that business in Pennsylvania, and it was one of the first things that Governor Ridge tackled to get rid of, because it was egregious. It's like, wait a minute, this is one of the new industries that is emerging. Why would we want to set ourselves out as the place where this ought not to happen?
And that's one of the basic tenets you learn in an economics 101 class: is if you want less of something, tax it. So if you want less of economic growth that comes from new industries, then levy a tax on it. And that's where we are. And that's where we keep coming back to because of this structural deficit that we're caught in. So something needs to change drastically in order for us to reset. And, you know, we're seeing a reset in Washington, D.C. right now. We're talking about how we think about things differently in Washington. Maybe we can see some of that come to Harrisburg.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And so, Rebecca, you know, again, focusing on competitiveness, you know, the world is not standing still. Private sector investment decisions are voluntary, and so this is why, you know, in my opinion, that our lawmakers and decision makers should be focused on nurturing a pro-growth business environment where we can earn that private sector investment so that we have more dynamism, more jobs, more wealth creation, all that stuff. And so our leaders need to be looking at our competitor states and not just our neighbor states. I mean, if we want to feel good about ourselves, yes, look at New York and New Jersey, and we are, in fact, slightly less bad. But when you look at the high-performing states, which are not that far away, I mean, you look at states like Virginia, Indiana, North Carolina, there's been dramatic improvement in Ohio. And, you know, I know that Governor Shapiro, you know, likes to, you know, complain about, you know, he's tired of losing to Ohio. Well, you know, there are some smart things that are being done in Columbus. Let's take a look at that. Maybe those are things that we should emulate.
Sure. I think Florida is a great state to look at because it's very similar to Pennsylvania in a lot of ways. We have a lot of the same sort of population. We both tend toward an older population. Our population is similar in size, but Florida is ranked fourth nationally in tax competitiveness. And looking at Florida, there's a great report that comes out every year called Rich States, Poor States, which really looks at a lot of the economic indicators for all the states and compares them and compares how they're doing from an economic competitiveness perspective. So I looked at Florida and I compared it to Pennsylvania because we know if Florida's ranked fourth, it's doing pretty well from an economic tax competitiveness standpoint. So what are they doing differently and why are they so successful? Well, first of all, they don't have a personal income tax in Florida.
Wow. Okay.
At all. So that makes a big difference. Their corporate net income tax is 5.5%. And ours is, it's now 8.99%, I believe, if I remember correctly. It's on its way down right now, but it's still very high. I think it's still number two in the nation,
yeah,
if I remember correctly.
It's among the, we're starting to roll the boulder, but the rate reduction is only going to be 0.5% a year. So it's going to take us
a
number of years to get us to the point where many of our competitors already are.
They have no inheritance tax in Florida, whereas in Pennsylvania, a lot of our small businesses are forced to pay an inheritance tax on businesses that are passed down through the families, which is unfortunate. They have a tax expenditure limit in their budget, which we do not.
So Tallahassee can only spend so much and then they got to stop?
Yes, apparently.
Wow.
The combination of a lot of these things together gives Florida, according to this rank, the overall performance rank of number one, whereas Pennsylvania is number 44.
Wow.
So this is a policy prescription for us. And I will add, too, that their absolute domestic migration is over 1.9 million people, whereas compared to Pennsylvania, almost 259,000 people that we lost.
So they had almost 2 million people move in, and we had more than 250,000 Americans move out.
Yes.
We especially need to keep the younger people who are in their working lives and paying taxes to shoulder the burden that we have because of our large, you know, senior population and the services that they need. And, of course, the fact that they're beyond their working years and no longer paying income taxes. How well does the governor's budget proposal match up with that vision?
It simply doesn't match. And, you know, the numbers that we're using are from the Independent Fiscal Office, a nonpartisan state agency that calls the balls and strikes on the budget. So this is not some fanciful thing that we've been making up a crisis that isn't really there. It's documented. But you're looking at the governor now asking for $51.5 billion in spending for the next fiscal year. That's a 9% increase in spending at a time like this. And he's, as was noted a little bit earlier, he wants to fund a lot of this expansion of spending with money from things like the legalized cannabis initiative and a tax on those skill games, which those mechanisms don't exist. The legalized marijuana doesn't exist in Pennsylvania yet, other than for medical purposes.
Yes, so those income sources are imaginary.
If in fact these things were somehow up and running and taxed, here's how much we think we could get.
But it almost makes you think that we're actually considering these policy initiatives just to make money off of them, right? Which,
in other words, let them exist only so we can tax them to death. Yes, it could be. But we also have done a terrible job. As mentioned, the CNIT, corporate net income tax, is still at a very high level relative to most other states. That's been slowly ratcheted down, but it's got to move more quickly. The governor, through pushing REGGIE, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and his own similar program at the state level, has driven a 30% spike in electricity costs in Pennsylvania, which is another tax. It's a tax on an industry that was singled out, a perfectly legitimate industry.
And legal a native industry, and it goes back to the computer tax. The attitude in Harrisburg is if there's a new industry, bleed it, which is not the way to encourage growth. And you raise an excellent metaphor there about the economy being the business sector, the productive sector, being a beast of burden to be whipped, that the correct view is that it is a garden to be tended And this is why you want to create the environment where businesses can flourish and create jobs and pay wages and benefits and retirement money and all the things that happen when you are satisfying customers by providing goods and services for which they then voluntarily hand over money. Like that's how the economy is supposed to work. That's how we're supposed to get growth. But when we treat the productive sector like a whipping boy and we put burden upon burden upon burden, regardless, without any eye to how the economy will react, then that's how we get into this very negative dynamic of underperforming with growth, having more of our people leave, and intensifying the structural deficit that we have where mandatory spending is increasing faster than the growth of the economy. So, these are all things that have to get settled by June 30. So good luck with that.
And it's going to take not just the work that we do, but it's going to take the citizens letting their voice be heard. And so one of the reasons, again, why does the watchdog bark?
Yes.
To alert the people who are in danger that they've got to do something.
Yes.
There's a problem.
Yes.
And we're here again today barking. And if listeners can magnify this by barking to their state representatives,
yes,
their state senators, their federal representation, this is a good time to do so.
And as the listeners of the show have heard me say many, many, many times over the years, that representative self-government is not a spectator sport, that it's up to each one of us to choose to be informed, to live life with our brains turned on, to be informed citizens and to exercise that citizenship, not just by voting, although you should do that, but also by interacting with your lawmakers and the other decision makers so that they know somebody is watching. Because I think a lot of this bad behavior happens when they think that they can do a bunch of stuff and then get away with it.
Yep, we've seen too much of that. One of the things we've done at Commonwealth Foundation is set up a special informational webpage at StopShapiroTaxes.com, which is a way to get prepared for taking action as a citizen.
Well, and I'm not at all surprised that CF has done something like put up a spiffy website. So I'm sorry, what is that again?
It is StopShapiroTaxes.com.
StopShapiroTaxes.com. There you have it. Oh, well, it's always great to be with you guys. We're down to the end of the time that we have on this program. We'll go around the horn. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
CommonwealthFoundation.org. Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Excellent. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The Pennsylvania Governor's Residence is a stately Georgian-style mansion that sits along the banks of the Susquehanna River in the northern part of the state's capital city of Harrisburg. The Governor's Residence is Pennsylvania's version of the White House. It has space for ceremonial functions. It also has living quarters for the Commonwealth's first family. It is filled with items of historical value, making it a place of special significance. On the morning of Sunday, April 13th, news began filtering out that there had been a fire at the residence. Like many, I assumed there must have been an electrical fire or some other accident and hoped the damage was minimal. Throughout the day, though, details emerged revealing the fire had been deliberately set by an arsonist bent on harming Governor Josh Shapiro. The perpetrator, whose name I am deliberately not mentioning, scaled a perimeter fence, broke in windows, and hurled incendiary devices before escaping into the night. Videos and photos showed the damage, which was extensive. More horrific is the fact Governor Shapiro and his family were sleeping in the residence, having held a Seder on the first night of the Jewish observance of Passover. The Shapiro family was awakened by first responders pounding on their door, and the Pennsylvania State Police shepherded them out of harm's way. The arsonist turned himself into authorities and claimed had he encountered the governor, he planned to beat him with a hammer. He expressed anti-Semitic anger at Shapiro related to the Palestinian conflict. The attack was more than arson. It was an assassination attempt. A few days later, Governor Shapiro addressed the violence, saying, quote, "I said after the assassination attempt on the president in Butler, I said in Altoona, after we captured the individual who shot and killed the U.S. healthcare CEO, and I said on Sunday that this kind of violence has no place in our society, regardless of what motivates it. This is not how we resolve our differences, and this is not okay. This level of violence has to end, and it has to be roundly condemned by everyone, both political parties, people from all different walks of life. It is not okay. Governor Shapiro is absolutely correct. It is not okay, and condemnation for the violent act perpetrated against him poured in from all political, ideological, and religious quarters. And there's something else that's not okay. Immediately after the fire, Governor Shapiro lauded the Harrisburg Bureau of Fire and the first responders who extinguished the fire at the governor's residence and led his family to safety, saying, quote, "Every day we stand with law enforcement and first responders who run towards danger to protect our communities. Last night they did so for our family, and Lori and I are eternally grateful to them for keeping us safe," end quote. Across Penn's Woods, however, fire and other emergency services are struggling to provide that level of protection to all of our citizens. To their credit, they are doing exactly that, but it is getting more and more difficult. Costs are staggering. One fire truck can cost upwards of $2 million or more. You can't sell enough barbecued chickens or hold enough bingos to pay for them. The number of volunteer firefighters has declined precipitously, making quick response more difficult. Since the 1970s, the number of volunteer firefighters has dropped from 360,000 to less than 37,000. Municipalities are struggling to find the revenue they need to supplement such volunteer services with paid responders. The money needed to maintain existing paid fire departments and the even greater financial burden to stand up paid departments, which have become necessary due to the lack of volunteers, are increasing exponentially. It is a cost municipalities cannot bear alone. State assistance is needed. Governor Shapiro used the firebombing at the governor's residence to spotlight the challenges facing emergency services and to rally support for legislative efforts to provide more funding. State government funds many important services, but public safety, fire, police, and EMS are the single most important function of government at all levels. In an era of divided government and deep partisan disagreements, there are few things on which we can all agree. We can, however, all agree that underfunding our first responders is not okay. And certainly, we can all agree with Governor Shapiro that violence against our candidates and elected officials is not okay. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WANB-AM in Waynesburg, WWSM-AM in Lebanon, along with WLLF-FM in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.